Hello and welcome to our program Business News, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Vanessa, and during the next half hour I will be reading articles from the Business Journal here on OWL Radio. Our first article is titled Jackpot.com Seeks to Add Convenience to Playing the Lottery, Partners with Spurs, by James McCandless. A new startup is looking to modernize the way millions of people across the country play the lottery, starting with the $8 billion lottery industry here in Texas. Jackpot.com built an app that allows users to purchase lottery tickets directly from their phone, tablet, or computer. It is a remote company with about 80 employees, around 10 of which work in the San Antonio area. It officially launched in Texas earlier this month with some major cash and major corporate partners. It has raised $77 million in two Series A funding rounds over the last year and raised additional funds from the Dallas Cowboys, New York Yankees, and other sports organizations. A number of partnerships, including with the San Antonio Spurs, give the company significant signage at a number of arenas and stadiums throughout the country. In an interview with the Business Journal, CEO Ashke Khanna is based in San Francisco and said launching in San Antonio was the perfect fit, citing a 2022 University of Houston study that the city has the highest lottery sales participation rate in Texas. "We chose San Antonio for a number of reasons," Khanna said. "The employees that we found were perfect for what we needed. The location that we found was perfect because San Antonio has a perfect mix of a super diverse population. It is a large and very strong employee and worker base, and it was just the perfect hub for our Texas operations. Here's how it works. Users deposit a sum of money. The app limits the amount you can deposit per day to $100. Purchase a lottery ticket through the website or app and pay a 15% convenience fee. Then you get a screenshot of the physical ticket. In the background, what happens is we have people on the ground in San Antonio purchasing that ticket on your behalf, printing, scanning, uploading it to your app so that you can see a visual scan of your ticket, and then we are storing that receipt should you win one of a number of big prizes," he said. This process happens in what Khanna describes as a retail center and a few convenience stores the firm has partnered with. He would not disclose the locations of those stores. To try and curb problem gambling, Khanna said, and his team have invested in technologies to alert the company and players of any outliers in spending, including deposit limits, self-suspension measures, and providing access to resources that promote responsible gambling. The company launched with a certification from the National Council on Problem Gambling, a Washington, D.C.-based advocacy group. There are also measures like two-factor authentication that work to prevent scams. When asked about criticisms of state lotteries, specifically that they are inherently predatory towards lower-income individuals, Khanna said early data from Jackpot.com shows that is not who's buying into the model. "When we look at our customer demographic, what I will tell you is typically what we are seeing is customers who are wealthier who are partaking in the lottery games that we offer," he said. "The hypothesis that I have is that there is an entire group of 20-somethings, 30-somethings, and 40-somethings, maybe 50 or 60-somethings, who have the means to view the lottery as entertainment and not as pure winning." Khanna would not get specific, but said the company plans to expand into two or three more states in the coming months. In forming partnerships with sports organizations, he noted the lottery is a $100 billion industry in the United States. "I think our partners saw our vision and market opportunity," he said. "For them, there's obviously an exciting overlap between their fans and people who enjoy buying lottery tickets for the entertainment value that it provides." Our next article is titled Banking Report: Broadway Bank Remains Bullish on the Texas Economy, by Ramzi Abu Galiom. The Business Journal quizzed some of San Antonio's banks, many of whom demonstrated growth in 2022, about their expectations for the new year. Though many are concerned about a looming recession, many also claim to be poised for growth. If San Antonio and Texas as a whole have good fundamentals, strong in migration, job growth, and a healthy housing industry, those projections could hold true and the Alamo City may keep on growing. The following conversation was with three executives from Broadway Bank: President and CEO David Bone, Austin Market President Blake Absher, and San Antonio Market President and Chief Commercial Banking Officer Joshua Loden. 2023 is purportedly going to be a good year for mergers and acquisitions. Are you looking at those possible strategies for growth, or are you taking a more organic approach? Bone: I think we have done one acquisition in the past, but it has mostly been organic for us. It seems like San Antonio is still pushing forward, not retracting, and there is a lot of optimism. Our customer base is bullish about 2023 as well. In which banking sectors are you anticipating the most growth in 2023? Loden: We see a lot of growth in healthcare and in industrial real estate and multifamily residences. While single-family housing slows with higher interest rates, people are still coming here and still need a place to live. Absher: We have been very fortunate to be in the market that we are in. As the Austin and San Antonio regions have moved into each other, we expect to continue to grow, but maybe not at the same rate as the last 2 years. What challenges do you anticipate in the coming year? Loden: There are challenges in the overall economics, but the migration and demographics of Texas are strong as a whole. The Dallas Fed recently published an article about the labor market in Texas growing twice as fast as the national average. Banks finance that growth, the growth of companies. Has financing for commercial projects slowed down since the interest rate hike? Loden: We have seen a bit of the slowdown in some of the commercial asset classes, seen in industrial and multifamily put on hold. Bone: The increase in interest rates have made some of these deals less viable, but developers are still hungry to get them done. One of the solutions is to put in more equity. Once the rate environment peaks, these projects will push forward. Absher: Another area we are excited about is that we have a very vibrant tech industry in Austin. We continue to see significant companies that are moving into this area, and we are thinking about how we can foster relationships in that ecosystem. What other opportunities are you taking advantage of? Bone: San Antonio is our backyard, our hometown, but we have gone to all Texas markets. We are about to celebrate being in Austin for 10 years, and we are looking to hire bankers in the Houston market, and we will probably hire 4 or 5 more in Dallas. Absher: It has been a special year for Broadway, all the milestones around our growth. I think it has been fun being wildly successful here locally. There is a demand for an authentic banking relationship. We are blessed. We have got a great Broadway banking family, a great private bank, wealth management team, and a growing mortgage department. And our retail footprint is growing. Our next article is titled Workplace Bullying is on the Rise and It is Hitting Gen Z the Hardest, by Mark Burnett and Andy Medici. Workplace bullying is on the rise, and young professionals are feeling the brunt of it. That is one takeaway from Ethisphere's 2023 Ethical Culture and Compliance Perceptions Assessment, which found a 13% increase in bullying since the start of the pandemic, while most other forms of workplace misconduct decline. Overall, about 1/3 of employees said they observed bullying, which was up from 20% before the pandemic. With turnover still elevated and the labor market expected to remain tight, the stakes are high for employers when it comes to combating bullying. Research has shown a toxic workplace culture is among the top causes of turnover, in addition to its effects on the physical and mental health of employees. In a hybrid world, experts say it's incumbent upon businesses to be proactive on culture, but they note the fragmented nature of hybrid offices can create its own share of challenges. Ethisphere's analysis even speculated if the reliance on screens as opposed to in-person work is contributing to the increase in observed bullying. That is particularly true with younger employees, many of which entered the workforce during the remote stages of the pandemic and were not accustomed to the pre-pandemic workplace. Those employees, especially members of Gen Z, are also among the most critical for companies' workforce talent pipelines. Ethisphere's report found Gen Z accounted for an outsized share of bullying claims, but was also the least likely to report them to management. About 39% of Gen Z said they did not report workplace bullying and misconduct, the highest among all age groups. About 56% of Gen Z workers said they did not report misconduct because they don't believe their bosses would do anything about it. About 47% also said they feared retaliation in the workforce, with Gen Z also having the lowest percentage of employees, 85%, aware of workplace policies that prohibit retaliation for reporting misconduct. One reason could be lack of exposure to the system, yet fear for one's job is a powerful motivator to say or do nothing when colleagues are misbehaving and directly undercuts a culture of ethics and accountability. And when we see how much more this is impacting Gen Z, the need to address younger employees on this front becomes clear, the report noted. Those who did speak up generally broached the topic with their immediate manager first, underscoring what experts say is often a weak link for businesses, equipping managers to facilitate discussions on sensitive topics, and proactively setting corporate-wide expectations around what reporting, investigations, and actions will entail. These frontline employees are critical to ensuring what an ethical culture is embedded across an organization and that reports are effectively addressed, Ethisphere's CEO Erica Salmon-Byrne said in the report. In many ways, experts say the hybrid model has made preparing managers for those discussions an even greater challenge, underscoring the importance of ongoing candid communication at all levels of the organization. Experts have told the playbook one of best practice for preventing toxic workplaces is holding retention interviews with employees. Those interviews, which could involve officials within the human resources department or others outside of direct managers, can be a tremendous asset. That is, interviewing people while they're there to find out what works and what doesn't work, Dr. Jane Morgan, a cardiologist and executive director of the COVID task force at Piedmont Healthcare Corporation, recently told the playbook. That helps make certain that we are keeping politics out of the workplace and that all religions and cultures are welcomed. You think that people feel welcomed, but we have not taken the time to ask them what it is like to be in their shoes. What can we do to make it more comfortable for you? Experts say political discussions represent a growing trouble spot for employers. A survey by the Society of Human Resource Management in October 2022 found that about 20% of workers have experienced poor treatment in the workplace due to their political views. About 24% said they have suffered political affiliation bias in 2022, compared to just 12% of workers in 2019. About 20% of human resource professionals said there was a greater political volatility at work than there was just 3 years ago. Unfortunately, we have seen a real decline in civility when people express their opinions and beliefs, and it is a barrier to success for employers and their employees, said SHRM President and CEO Johnny C. Taylor Jr. Taylor said the relative anonymity of social media is a factor that has spilled into workplaces. In today's climate, people are saying, "I can't work with you if you don't share my views," Taylor said. It's a problem HR professionals and business leaders cannot ignore. The reports on bullying and workplace incivility come as workers continue to say they are dealing with mental health struggles at work. A survey of 1,000 workers ages 22 to 28 with at least a bachelor's degree by the Mary Christie Institute found 51% said they needed help for emotional or mental health problems over the last year. About 45% said their work environment has taken a toll on their mental health. This is more evidence that mental health problems, particularly stress and anxiety, are extending beyond college and into the workplace, said Sarah Ketchin-Lipson, one of the Boston University School of Public Health and Healthy Minds Network. Lipson said supporting the mental health of young professionals is likely to benefit both productivity and retention. Our next article is titled New York Firm Plans Investing Heavily in San Antonio Starting with Westover Hills Project by James McCandless. Sovereign Properties, a New York-based multifamily developer, is kicking off a handful of multifamily projects in the San Antonio area with the six-building 418,000 square foot Atlantica at Westover Hills. The project is going up at the southern corner of Nationwide Drive and Texas State Highway 151 and is billed to start on July 1st with an expected completion date of August 31st, 2025. Not only is the firm betting on the prospects of Westover Hills, which is quickly becoming one of the hottest areas in the city for growth, but they also have started plans to capitalize on similar positive economic conditions in the Alamo Ranch and New Braunfels areas. Sovereign declined to disclose the purchase price of the land or the cost of construction, but Bexar County's 2022 appraisal of the parcel puts its value at about $4.1 million. The project calls for 312 units split between 1, 2, and 3 bedroom units, each having an average square footage of 724,000, 1,086, and 1,372, respectively. Average rents for those units are expected to be $1,403, $1,979, and $2,542. Russ Criver, principal and CEO of Sovereign Properties, told the Business Journal that his firm is confident in the overall growth of the metropolitan area and the subsequent demand for housing that is needed to meet that demand. "We think it's going to lead the nation in job growth over the coming decade," he said. "As a result, we are investing heavily. We think tech growing is going to favor San Antonio for a number of reasons. Between the Foreign Trade Zone, the NSA and FBI cybersecurity campuses in the area, all of the biotech firms that are expanding their footprints in San Antonio, we are really bullish on both population growth and job growth in the area." The average renter, according to Sovereign Properties Vice President of Development Camille Zook, a person who may look to these types of apartments in order to avoid luxuries that they cannot attain through a single-family home. "Our typical apartment renter is upper middle class," Zook said. "It could be a working professional or a family that is looking for a higher-end product that they may not be able to purchase in a home, or they want to move into a better area, whether it's for a closer commute or better quality schools." In line with that profile, the company plans to outfit the complex with a number of amenities, including a dog spa, where pet owners can take their dogs to get groomed. When asked about potential delays and recession, Criver said he believes any downturn will not be as bad as others are expecting and that this project will stay on track. "So for us, we are going to be well into a recovery from whatever minor recession we may have," he said. We believe that job growth and the fundamentals in the area will carry the day. Humphreys and Partners have been hired as the architects. The firm has not made a selection for a general contractor yet. Our next article is titled How San Antonio Could Benefit as Corpus Christi Moves Closer to Tapping New Water Source by Scott Bailey. Port of Corpus Christi commissioners voted to authorize staff to pursue a second permit needed to advance the development of a desalination facility on Harbor Island. It is a critical step for a proposed project that backers believe could have an economic impact stretching as far as San Antonio. As large volume water users, our industrial partners long have expressed the need for a sustainable, drought-proof water source, Port of Corpus Christi Commission Chairman Charles Zahn said. Those users, project backers point out, including Valero Energy Corporation, Howard Energy Partners, and New Star Energy LP, are based in San Antonio and have significant operations along the Texas coast. All are beneficiaries of us having an uninterruptible water, Zahn told me. The first permit issued by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality in September granted the port's application to discharge effluent water. This next permit, Zahn said, will address the intake for the salt water that will be converted to desalinated water. Al Areola, who was president and CEO of the San Antonio-based South Texas Business Partnership before being named CEO of the United Corpus Christi Chamber of Commerce last fall, considers this latest development a significant step. Desalination is a reliable, affordable alternative water source that the state of Texas needs to consider including in a long-range water plan, he said. South Texas is growing rapidly, and investing in this type of infrastructure is necessary for our collective long-term sustainability. I reported in August that the port engaged in a roughly $650 million expansion and improvements of its own infrastructure had its eye on a 254-acre site it owns on Port Aransas Harbor Island for seawater desalination facilities. The proposed facility could produce some 50 million gallons of drinkable water per day. We were talking about scale that has never been done anywhere in the United States, Port Corpus Christi CEO Sean Strawbridge said. The city of Corpus Christi has also sought permits for a desalination plant. San Antonio could be a beneficiary of any large desalinization project on the Texas coast, Zahn said. There are some detractors. The Port Aransas Conservancy claims the Harbor Island plan would cause ecological damage to surrounding wetlands. While port officials acknowledge that the city of Corpus Christi is the primary water provider for the area, Zahn contends there are resource concerns that must be addressed. We will continue to proactively develop a much-needed solution for the Coastal Bend's anticipated water supply challenges in a manner that will ensure the continued economic health and prosperity of our region, he said. Our next article is titled Housing Starts Drop for Another Consecutive Quarter by Ramzi Abu-Ghalioum. San Antonio's housing market is still in free fall as new home starts drop for a second consecutive quarter, according to preliminary data from Zonda. The real estate analytics firm recorded 2,274 starts in the San Antonio, New Braunfels area during the fourth quarter of 2022, a 47% decline from the previous quarter. A start is recorded when the concrete foundation is poured for a single housing unit, which Zonda visually confirms. This marks the second consecutive drop in starts since the second quarter of 2022, which saw a record-breaking 6,736 starts. Zonda anticipates the total number of starts in 2023 will fall somewhere between 16,000 and 17,000, close to the 16,389 starts in 2020. The decline in starts represents a stabilizing market, according to Keith Hughes, Zonda Director of Business Development. "We are going to get back to a sustainable pace of building," he said, "where the trade workers can remain employed, but not putting ourselves in a position where we don't have enough workers, supplies, or any of the problems we had over the last 2 years." Hughes said he anticipates starts to continue declining until the market sheds enough inventory to make building more homes viable again. In San Antonio, there are currently 11,954 homes under construction. Builders need to sell through that inventory, and that might take 1, 2, or even 3 quarters, he said. With discounts and incentives, there is demand out there. He warned that as the market stabilizes, those discounts and incentives are likely to be phased out of future deals. Our next article is titled "Google Parent Alphabet to Slash 12,000 in Its Biggest Ever Job Reduction" by Cromwell Schubarth. Google Parent Alphabet Incorporated on Friday said it will cut about 12,000 jobs in a 6% workforce reduction that is the latest in a wave of layoffs in the technology sector. CEO Sundar Pichai said the move will come in all of the Mountain View-based companies' units and geographies, but some areas will be more heavily impacted, including recruiting and projects outside of the company's core businesses. The company last week said it planned to cut 200 jobs at its South San Francisco-based Verily Life Sciences Health Unit in a 15% reduction and 40 jobs at Mountain View-based Intrinsic Robotics Unit in a 20% cut there. The Alphabet layoffs follow Microsoft's announcement this week that it will cut 10,000 Facebook parent Meta Platforms Incorporated, 11,000 jobs cut in November, and Amazon.com's decision earlier this month to end 18,000 jobs. Before these cuts at Alphabet, tech employers had cut a total of nearly 195,000 jobs in 2022 and 2023, according to layoffs.fyi. "Over the past 2 years, we have seen periods of dramatic growth," Alphabet and Google CEO Sundar Pichai said in a memo sent to employees on Friday morning. "To match and fuel that growth, we hired for a different economic reality than the one we face today." Alphabet is offering its U.S.-based employees 2 months' notice, 16 weeks of severance pay, with 2 additional weeks for each year an affected worker has been with the company. It said it will follow local processes and laws in other countries. The company said it will also provide laid-off employees with help regarding their immigration status, job placement, and mental health. Alphabet stock rose nearly 3% in a pre-market trading after Friday's announcement of job cuts. It has lost about 30% of its value in the past 12 months. You have been listening to Business News on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Vanessa saying goodbye from Owl Radio.